Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Bunker Hill Mining, traded on the CSE under the symbol BNKR and on the OTCQB under the symbol BHLL. We are chatting with the CFO, David Weens. Now, just to bring everybody up to speed, the company is focused on the fast-producing Bunker Hill mine, the Bunker Hill project broadly in Idaho. This is the company's cornerstone asset, and there was recently some pretty big news regarding a finance package to help move this project and past mine back into production. Now, David, before we get into this financing package, I do want you just to provide a quick little overview on this Bunker Hill project and the overall strategy here to get this project back into production. Please just get everybody up to speed on the overall strategy here at this asset.
Absolutely. And thanks, Corey, for having me back on the show here. And I think it's important to recap just who we are and what we're looking to do, particularly for new listeners. So let's absolutely start with that. The Bunker Hill Mine, as you alluded to, past producing, it produced for about 100 years between 1885 and 1981. It is located in northwest Idaho in the prolific Silver Valley, which is the most prolific silver producing region in the world. It produced the third largest amount of silver in that Silver Valley over that time period. Shut down in the early 1980s for environmental reasons, not economic ones. Frankly, it was an environmental disaster. There was a zinc plant, a smelter on site, and when it shut down, there was actually not a single living tree growing in the Silver Valley at the time. So, a disaster on all fronts. The Environmental Protection Agency stepped in, cleaned it up over 35 years. That ended 5 years ago, and the current management team, including myself, came in about 18 months ago, comprised of former Barrick executives. So we're led by our executive chairman, Richard Williams, who is the former chief operating officer of Barrick. He brought with him Sam Ash, my boss, the CEO, who is running Barrick's largest scale copper mine in Zambia, Lumwana, and Brad Barnett, our VP sustainability, who was Barrick's head of closure and rehabilitation. So perfectly suited for the challenges and overcoming them at Bunker Hill. So what we're looking to do in short is restart this mine in a much more sustainable manner than was done historically. We've partnered with the EPA, other regulatory agencies, and with our finance partners, which I'm sure we'll come through to in a minute, to position ourselves to rapidly restart this polymetallic mine. It is worth noting that it is polymetallic. It produced a massive amount of silver, and we think there's massive silver potential going forward. However, it also did produce a lot of zinc and lead. So it's a pretty exciting opportunity.
All right, David, let's talk about that news that came out December 20th. It's a financing package totaling about $50 million. It's in three different stages. This financing package is coming from Sprott Private Resource Streaming and Royalty Corp. The three different stages are initially an $8 million royalty convertible debenture, and then a $5 million convertible debenture, which can be converted into shares of the company. That first royalty convertible debenture will get converted or can get converted to a royalty on the mine. And then the final part is a stream of up to $37 million. I'll post a link to that news release so everyone can read through some of the more nuanced terms here. But David, take us through the stages here and what this helps in terms of moving the project forward closer to production.
Absolutely. There's certainly a lot to unpack there. So I'll try to simplify it as much as I can and answer any follow-up questions. So as you say, $50 million finance package, that provides exactly what we were intending to do, which we've been talking about all year, which is to provide the majority of the capital that we will need to restart the mine in a non-dilutive manner, i.e. not having to raise equity to do it at these lower prices. So that is comprised of $8 million in effectively what will become a 1.85% royalty on the property, life of mine, on gross revenue. We expect that to close over the next 2 to 3 weeks, concurrent with the mine purchase, which will help fund the mine purchase, as well as an initial payment to the EPA, and we'll come to the EPA settlement in a minute. The $5 million convertible debenture, we do fully expect that to convert to shares, particularly considering the conversion price is 30 cents. And as of today, our share price is, as a result of this announcement, which the market rightfully liked quite a bit, our share price is already above 30 cents. So we certainly expect that to convert to equity. That $5 million funding will help get us through the first quarter of 2022, advance engineering studies, cover working capital and other expenses in order to get to a construction decision at the end of the first quarter or the beginning of the second quarter of 2022. And that really is just a formality. All of us certainly expect that we will be absolutely going ahead with this rapid restart of the mine. That leads to the stream component of the financing, which will be available at that point in time, the end of the first quarter or beginning of second quarter, concurrent with making that construction decision. And so the key condition precedent on that is having the full finance in place for the mine. Again, the $50 million in and of itself does make up, we believe, most of what is needed. And over the next couple of months, we'll be doing the work to just refine the numbers and the plan so that we have an exact number of how much money we need. And during that time, we will continue to explore other financing options that are non-dilutive in nature. We are permitted under the Sprott $50 million package to secure additional funding of up to $15 million plus $13 million of a cost overrun facility. Again, that's non-dilutive financing, not raising equity to do that. So the $50 million plus that 15 and 13, if we're able to secure that, we will determine, how much, if any, equity will be required on that and take action accordingly. In terms of the characteristics of the stream itself, if we draw the $37 million, the full $37 million, we have the option of between 27 and 37 at our election. If we draw the full 37, it will be a 10% stream on all metals produced until a certain at the mine until a certain quantity of metals is met, which will, according to our PEA, probably be about 10 or 11 years of mine life. At that point, the 10% would step down to 2%. And I think what's important to note about that is a lot of the streams that you see in the market are on precious metals only. So, obviously Wheaton Precious Metals, Sandstorm, others, a lot of those streams you see are streaming all of the silver or all of the gold, for instance. In our case, this is a 10% stream on all metals, so zinc, lead, and silver. And that's quite important because it does leave that silver upside for our investors to the degree that we plan to realize that over that mine life. So that's quite important. Another aspect of the stream that's important to note is we do have the ability to buy back 50% of it at a premium of 40%. So what that means is that if we take the example of drawing the full $37 million of stream, we can buy back $18.5 million of the 37, and the 10% stream would go down to a 5% stream. And then at the end of that minimum quantity, instead of it being 2% after, it would be 1% after. And so that's quite an important degree of flexibility in the finance package because it allows us to effectively, part of the stream is bridge financing to the extent that we want to buy it back. And then, the stream can be managed down to quite a reasonable level that is not punitive on the project.
Well, David, there really are a lot of moving parts on this financing just for investors to keep tabs on. But I think you did a good job there of unpacking it for everybody. And so, out of that initial 8 million royalty debenture, there is that right for Sprott to have the 1.85% royalty. But then on this stream, where it's 10%, you got the right to buy it back down, by 50% to get it from a 10% stream down to a 5% stream. So you've got some optionality there. And then you have that additional funding that you're going to be working on. Just to remind people, though, currently you are leasing the mine with the plan to purchase it. So when you say you're going into a construction decision, obviously, if you're buying the mine, that's leaning towards a strong yes. And then what other steps have to happen to get you to that pre-feasibility study that you need to work on later next year?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and that's worth clarifying, Shad, that up until now, we have not owned the mine. So we've been under a lease to purchase option. And what we are doing concurrently, which is why this is such a massive announcement, what we are doing concurrently with securing this financing is exercising that option to purchase the mine using $5.4 million of the funding that's coming in from Sprott. And so the closing of this financing, or the first couple of pieces of it at least, over the next few weeks, is happening with the closing of the mine. And as you say, you know, absolutely our intent is to have a yes. So, I mean, to an extent, you know, you hate to use the word predetermined, but I don't think that's too strong of a word to use in terms of what the answer to that question of what the construction decision will be. And that answer will be yes, we will be going ahead with that. It's just a matter of exactly what that looks like. So to answer your question of what needs to happen in terms of that formal construction decision, there's a few different work streams that we are doing as part of getting the project to PFS level concurrent with the construction decision. So that includes mine plan optimization, geotechnical assessments, metallurgical testing, various rounds of that, plant engineering, and stay tuned on that front, because we've been highlighting to the market for quite some time now that we have been in commercial discussions about potentially buying a used process plant. And that is the one key piece of the puzzle here, because Bunker Hill does not have a mill. It has hundreds of miles, thousands of miles of tunnels. This is a massive mine. And because it produced for 100 years, it has a massive amount of infrastructure, both in terms of the development, but, you know, the hoist rooms, you know, and a lot of this is operable still. It's got rail going in and out, administration buildings, which are still there and usable, and that effectively serve as our head office in Idaho. And so the one piece that is missing is a process plant, and we are in advanced discussions on securing that. So, you know, to sum up, what needs to happen over the next, and will happen over the next 3 months or so, is finishing those studies, securing a process plant, and then making that formal construction decision concurrent with having all funding in place, which will include the stream and any other non-dilutive financing.
So, David, in terms of general time frame, can you give us an outline of about how long all of those things will take to come together?
Yeah, about 3 months or so, I would say. About 3 months from today. So by the end of the first quarter, we are planning to be in a position of having completed those studies, or at least having completed them to what we would call a PFS level sufficient for us to make that construction decision. Now, in terms of the timeline of how long the actual restart and build will take, that's absolutely unchanged from what we've been planning, which is sort of that 18-month period. And you can consider that 18 months to be starting effectively, you know, now through the end of the first quarter. So when you triangulate that, we would expect, subject to confirmation of these studies, to reach commercial production in the third quarter of 2023.
Well, David, there's another component which you had touched on briefly, but maybe we should unpack a little bit more, and that's the payment to the EPA, the settlement agreement, where you're deferring $17 million of the existing $19 million with $2 million payment up front. Just walk people through what that payment is for and maybe unpack the prior history, because there's some confusion about what kind of cleanup needs to be done, what's already done, and what that payment is for.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a really good point, Chad, that I think it's important for listeners and investors to understand, because, you know, there has been a lot of misunderstanding about the nature of this EPA liability and what, you know, what that means for potential liability and payments, because people think, well, you know, this was an environmental disaster. The EPA had to spend decades cleaning these things up. I mean, is the company on the hook for, you know, any of that past environmental, you know, and the financial associated liability? And the short answer is no. And the reason for that is the settlement that the company got into with the EPA back in 2017 and 2018. So that agreement dictated that Superfund, the company, is not responsible for Superfund related liabilities. What it was responsible for, and it's a defined amount, is the cost that the EPA spent to treat the water coming out of the Bunker Hill mine from 1994 onwards. And that amount totaled $20 million. $1 million of the $20 million was paid, leaving $19 million. And the company, and effectively this new management team, when we came in last year, inherited a situation where the company was in arrears on that payment schedule, because the pre-agreed payment schedule to the EPA for the 19 was supposed to be about $3 million a year. Unfortunately, the company, up until this week, was in arrears of about $11 million with the EPA, which is, you know, a very unfortunate on many different fronts situation to be in, because, you know, not only were we not meeting our commitments and didn't have the ability to meet our commitments with the EPA to meet that payment schedule, but it prevented us from buying the mine and prevented us from getting any financing. And so, as you can imagine, in these financing discussions with Sprott, certainly a condition precedent to them putting a dime of money in was for us to have restructured that liability with the EPA. And so that big announcement that we put out this week, that's what that does, is that $19 million, rather than being effectively due right away, or most of it due right away, it allows us, you know, partnering with the EPA, and they have been amazing partners over the last year to help come to a solution that works for both sides here, allows us to pay 17 of that $19 million out of cash flow, which will be generated from the Bunker Hill mine starting in 2024. There is a $2 million payment due upfront, which will be coming out of that royalty convertible debenture, but the remaining 17 will be paid out of cash flow. And that really is what unlocks everything here, which is why we announced it all at once. You know, it unlocks the ability to buy the mine, and it unlocks the ability to get external financing, of which we've achieved $50 million. So this truly is, you know, liftoff for this company and for this asset as a result of restructuring that liability, which again is only comprised of that $19 million. There's no liability on top of that, which is important for people to understand.
Yeah, that is a key development in this news release, because look, that $19 million, it was an overhang, but now you've managed to push back a large portion of that and pay it out of free cash flow. I do want you just to quickly give everybody an update, too, on some of the news that came out in September and November, because September, the company announced an updated PEA. We saw a 42% increase on the NPV, 29% decrease in all-in sustaining costs, 41% increase in free cash flow over the extended 11-year mine life. What are the economics around this asset? Please summarize for us, David.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of because, I mean, those are pretty material announcements in and of itself, and I'm glad you brought them up. I mean, so let's start with the PEA in September, and that's the updated PEA. So it's worth going back to April. We put out a PEA in April, $101 million NPV, 10-year mine life, $20 million of free cash flow a year. Over the following 5 months, the team worked very hard at optimizing the mining method and the mine plan. And we reissued what we called the updated PEA, which is what you're referring to, in September, 42% increase in NPV, a big decrease in costs to be near the bottom quartile of the zinc cost curve. And, you know, that to us is a demonstration of what this team does, is we are focused on value creation on the ground. We're operators by nature. We know how to get value out of an asset like this, and that really was demonstrated in that press release. Now, you may be wondering, well, what metal prices did we use? Did you just pull a trick like a lot of mining companies did and just increase the mining prices or the metal prices in order to get an NPV? And no, we didn't. Even though the spot prices of the metals, and anybody who's aware in particular where the zinc market is right now, with the zinc price above $1.60, I mean, I think we would have been forgiven if we did decide to increase the prices, but we decided, no, we wanted people to compare it like for like, and we kept them the same. So we used $1.15 per pound of zinc, and that's versus the current spot of over $1.60. We used 90 cents per pound lead. That compares to about 105, 110 lead in the market today, and $20 silver. And silver has obviously come off here, but it's still above those levels now. So we wanted to make sure that we were using conservative metal prices still. You know, coincidentally, if you were to use today's metal prices in the model, and I ran this yesterday morning because we had another webinar and I put it in the slide, the NPV goes up from $143 million to over $300 million. So $315 million to be precise. And it's worth noting that $315 million does not include any mine life extension beyond the 11 years in that updated PEA, nor does it include any of the high-grade silver potential, and there's a lot of that, at depth. And when I say depth, it's worth noting that this is the shallowest of the major mines in the Silver Valley. So if you look at Lucky Friday, for instance, which is one of our neighbors owned by Hecla, you know, they're down around 9,000 feet. We're only down at 4,000 once we get down there. So huge potential, which is not factored into that PEA. And if you go back to our market cap today of $40 to $45 million and compare, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in that potential value relative to our market cap today, we think that's a pretty attractive value proposition.
Well, David, I'm glad that you brought up the sensitivity to the metals prices as they are now, because I was going to mention the higher price of zinc, and with so much of the deposit being zinc focused, that's a big differential between the, you know, the 110 and the 160 where it's at today. And same thing with silver. If it's to have a better year next year, as we hope, I'm glad that you covered some of those other figures. But one other question I have just real quick as we wrap up is the exploration upside. You mentioned that you think you can bring more silver back into the fold again at depth, and that previously it was kind of a 50-50 mix between the zinc and the silver. Where do you see the exploration upside? And then how much of that will be factored into the work the company does in 2022?
Absolutely. So we do plan on delineating that high-grade silver at depth. But just to manage expectations, if we were to drill those holes today all the way down to depth, they'd be very expensive holes to drill. So we certainly don't want to tell investors that over the next couple of months, we're planning on doing high-grade silver drilling, you know, down to 4,000 feet. So it will take us a little bit of time to get down there as we dewater the mine and get into production. So our near-term focus is absolutely to get into production and focus on that development efforts. However, one thing that investors on the exploration front can definitely look forward to here is the results of the geophysics survey that we did a few months ago. So that still has not come out, and we do expect to come out in the next few weeks, which could be pretty exciting. So just as a recap of what that was, is we did a, you know, effectively ground penetrating radar survey to the south and southwest of the property that really has been untouched historically. So we're talking at like 1200 acres of land here. That compares to 900 acres of the existing mine footprint. So looking for target drill areas near surface, you know, the kind of mineralization that had that galena quartz silver mineralization historically that underpinned, as you say, 50% of the revenue stream historically over the 100 years. So lots of near-term exploration upside with respect to the regional geophysics results. In addition, and we don't have time in this show to go through it, but we entered into that. It's easy to forget that we entered into that no-cost option for that prospective gold district in Colorado at the Lundin Mining District. And there's some very low-hanging fruit, we believe, on the drill targets there. And we're talking about many ounces, you know, per ton that were historically mined there going back to the early 1900s. So we think there's some pretty exciting potential there as well. So we're putting those plans together now. Our near-term focus is absolutely to get the Bunker Hill mine back up into production, but we have not forgotten about value through the drill bit as well.
All right, David, appreciate this update. A lot of news that has come out of the company in the last couple months, and a lot of news that is moving this project forward. If anybody has any follow-up questions for David regarding anything going on at Bunker Hill Mining, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We will get those questions addressed for you. And again, we will post that link to that financing deal below this interview. David, thank you very much for your time. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Same to you guys. Really appreciate coming on the show, and exciting times at Bunker Hill. And we will speak again soon, I'm sure.